Welcome to the 155 Election Podcast, interviews with candidates running for mayor, city council, and school board trustee in Hamilton, Ontario. Episode 120. Linda Lukasik, you're running for city councilor in Ward 5. Welcome to the 155 Podcast.
Thanks very much, Joey.
Firstly, tell us a little bit about yourself.
My name is Linda Lukasik. I live in Ward 5. I've lived in the ward for 26 years now. I'm currently the executive director of Environment Hamilton, and with some reduced duties while I'm running right now for the Ward 5 councillor seat.
Why are you running?
I'm running because it feels like right now we're on the brink of some significant transformations in the city. It feels like it's an exciting time. I'm inspired to see some of the other candidates who've stepped up in other parts of the city. And I made a decision that now is a good time for me to give it a try.
Do you live in Ward 5, yes or no?
Yes.
Does it matter if one lives in the community one seeks to represent?
I believe it does, but for full disclosure, I have run for council before. 20 years ago, I ran in Ward 4 against the incumbent, Councillor Marula. And I did that while I didn't live in the ward. And it was to provide residents of that ward with the choice of a candidate who didn't support the construction of an expressway through Red Hill Valley.
How have you contributed to your community and our city?
I've been a resident of the ward since 1995, and I've always watched issues here where environment and quality of life is concerned. So even before Environment Hamilton existed, I was out there in the community observing, documenting, and reporting problems. So there is some industry in the ward, north of Barton Street. Hamilton Bioconversion was one facility that inflicted horrible odor impacts, and I worked to see that issue resolved. The old Swaru waste incinerator that many in the ward who've been here for a long time will remember is one where I worked with another community member. We exercised our rights under the Provincial Environmental Bill of Rights. We applied for an application for review to have the permits for that facility looked at, and ultimately 2 years later, the city closed the facility down, and it was at a point when that was the largest point source to air of cancer-causing dioxins in the country. So it was an important facility to shut down, and it led to a fast-tracking of more progressive approaches to waste management. The other important issue was the work in the Red Hill Valley, and that included looking for issues, and that led me and other community members to push for the old Rennie Street landfill to be cleaned up. And in that case, again, we all learned about environmental rights under the Federal Fisheries Act. And we initiated charges against the former city of Hamilton. They ultimately entered a guilty plea in the courts, and they were required to remediate the site and to pay a fine for the problems that they had caused there. And so now I'm proud to say you can go down to that area. Now it's Ward 4, but bordering on Ward 5, and the site has been properly contained and capped, and there's a meadow on the top and a recreational trail along the side of it. So, you know, definite improvement from an environmental health and quality of life for community point of view. So I feel like I've done a lot in the ward. And then in the broader city, of course, I've been involved in a host of issues through my work at Environment Hamilton. And that's included everything from food security to air quality issues. That's been a huge part of the work I've been engaged in, to more recently promoting smart urban growth management and preservation of prime agricultural land in rural areas.
What are two of your priorities for Ward 5 and two of your priorities for Hamilton as a whole?
In Ward 5, I think a really important priority is ensuring that we have safe streets for all. And I know this is an issue right across the city, but it often feels like areas that are sort of on the urban-suburban transition aren't being paid enough attention to. And for anyone who lives in the ward, you'll know what I'm talking about. It seems as though you cross over Red Hill into this area and suddenly bike lanes are few and far between, if they exist at all. The arterial streets are not pleasant to walk on. We still have stretches of arterials that are posted at 60 kilometers per hour. And it's in areas where there are a lot of people, where there's a high density of population. So that's certainly a priority for me. I'd like to see a complete streets assessment done for the ward and action taken as a result of that. And I just want to add, I know that Ward 5 is also a ward where people walk. If you get into the interior neighborhoods, you see people walking everywhere. So I think it's really important that we think about active transportation and we support that, do that audit, and take some serious action. I think in particular, there are concerns about east-west connections from Ward 5 to the rest of the city. You know, I'm a commuter cyclist, and I can tell you that that's often the worst stretch of my commute is getting from my neighborhood across Red Hill to the rest of the city. And then usually once I'm on the other side, I can get into a bike lane and I feel safer as I go. Another priority for me for Ward 5 is healthy, affordable housing. And that to me is very intimately connected with smart urban growth management. Ward 5 is poised to grow. We have the Centennial Neighborhood Secondary Plan that's ushering in some intensification. I'll point to the Eastgate Square site that people have been talking about. We already have a plan in place that allows, as of right, up to 20-story towers along the Queenston and Centennial corridors at Eastgate. So we need to ensure the city taps into all opportunities as we see that development coming to do it right. And that includes ensuring there is affordable and deeply affordable housing included in these redevelopments. And I know that's going to be challenging, but we need to be having those conversations very openly. As far as the city as a whole, a huge priority for me is responding to the climate emergency and all that it entails. So that also includes paying attention to climate adaptation, ensuring the most vulnerable Hamiltonians are supported, and we know right now that they sure aren't being supported. And then as well, the smart urban growth management, that firm urban boundary, and ensuring that we're accommodating growth through gentle and medium and high density where it's appropriate within the urban boundary, and also ensuring that housing affordability is considered given the crisis that we're in right now.
What are three skills you will bring to elected office that make you the best choice to represent Ward 10 on Hamilton City Council?
I have a whole lot of experience working on municipal issues. My goodness, I've spent decades now, so I know that will help me to hit the ground running if I am elected to office. I also bring an academic background that includes a mix of science, environmental studies, and planning. And I think all of those three combined are really helpful. They've proven to be helpful in the work that I do at Environment Hamilton, and I know they'll be important in the work that I do at City Hall. So I'm able to research and assess issues in depth. It's something that I've been trained to do through lots of years in school. And then finally, I'm a collaborative worker. So over the years and the work that I've done in community, I've had to sit at tables with people I'm excited about working with, and sometimes industry and other players who I don't agree with and they don't agree with me. And I use an approach that's respectful, that's rooted in the facts, and I think that will be really important to sitting around the council table.
The following preamble leads to questions regarding honesty and transparency. Let's presume you are elected. During the first few weeks, you will be briefed regarding what City Hall refers to as confidential matters. We do not know what confidential matters are presently being withheld from the citizens of Hamilton. All four councillors first elected in 2018 initially voted to support the Coots Paradise cover-up, before three of the new councillors began voting against the continuing cover-up. The Municipal Act prohibits members of council from releasing information the majority of council declares confidential. With all of this in mind, what principles and advice will help you determine what information should be confidential and what information should be made public?
Yeah, so this is a challenging one. And I would say, first, parameters set out in the Municipal Act regarding meetings and when it's deemed appropriate for council to go in camera and withhold information from the public. I think it's really important to ensure that the Act and any associated regulations are being properly interpreted where confidentiality rules and the need for public disclosure is concerned. Certainly, I think that's something that I'm going to make sure I understand going into the role. I also think it's important, and a lot of us are thinking about this issue within the context of the Should Oak spill or Sewergate, as it's come to be known. It's really important when you're having these conversations to consider the risks to the public if information isn't shared. And I think that needs to be the priority when there are any conversations about withholding information or potentially withholding information. And I think in that instance, many of us in the community would agree that it was completely inappropriate to withhold that information for that reason. And then I think it's also important to reflect on the reality of what already is actually public information. And sometimes players get bad legal advice. And I feel like in the case of, again, Sewergate, there was bad legal advice given, and that included withholding information that was public information. And with that, I'm referring to the order that came from the Ministry of the Environment that had all of the details that were withheld from us. The ministry followed the requirement to post in a high-profile area. My understanding, it was the lunchroom at the sewage treatment plant. And that's not appropriate. That's the sort of thing where Had the public known, those details would have been available to them right away. So understanding and asking those kinds of questions, I hope, will put me in a good position to ensure that what the public has the right to know, the public will be given access to.
The Red Hill Inquiry will issue its report early in the next term of council. The revelations regarding how City Hall ignored problems on the expressway and the toxic culture at City Hall, which silenced good people, are shocking. How do you plan to review and consider the final inquiry report when the commission releases its findings and recommendations?
This is another tough one, and no secret that I've never been a fan of the expressway. This just makes it feel even worse. So I have been tuning in to the inquiry now and again as it unfolds. And I lived through years of looking at the roadway project, raising concerns as a community member about the project and the impacts on environment and surrounding neighborhoods. I interacted with many of the players that I'm now seeing on the stand at the inquiry. And I knew that there were challenging personalities involved there. We need to consider this context and why it was, and likely still is, that toxic culture has and likely continues to thrive at City Hall. And in this instance, it appears to have been problematic dynamics between staff, the personalities involved. And that's challenging, but I really hope that these issues are addressed as part of the findings and recommendations coming out of the inquiry. And I think it's urgently important to really critically reflect on the pathway forward, given that there's a movement to expand Red Hill to 6 lanes. Personally, I don't support this plan. We have an infrastructure deficit and a climate crisis and a reality that bottlenecks exist at the QEW and 403 that need to be resolved before any expansion is on the table. So I would just finish here by saying, I'll carefully review the findings. This is a serious matter. Problems at the city arguably resulted in the loss of lives. And what unfolded has subsequently cost the city significant dollars. Estimates close to, I think we're pushing close to $30 million so far. And I know there are other urgent matters at the city that require attention and dollars, so we can't afford to lose more municipal money like this.
The construction of the B-Line LRT will begin during this term of council. It will be the largest construction project in Hamilton's recent history. How do you plan to respond to construction challenges and opportunities?
Ward 5 is the eastern terminus of the LRT at Eastgate Square, where we know that there's lots of change coming in addition. So we're likely to see LRT and other construction happening at the same time. So it's really essential to ensure that steps are taken to support businesses along the corridor. And for me, that would be Ward 5 businesses, and to consider creative ways to help to make this happen. Maybe we talk about neighborhood bus shuttles into core shopping areas, encourage travel in and out of the site that minimizes volumes of traffic. Might be a really good time to test out some enhanced active transportation options too. For pedestrians, maybe temporary bike lanes put in safely to encourage biking in and out of commercial areas with secure biking provided at the sites. And for construction in general, I have to say, I'm a stickler for proper site management. No secret there. You know, Environment Hamilton with our dust busters and other programs really encouraging people to demand proper construction site management. So I'll be there doing that in my community, whether I'm elected or not. So I'm talking about proper dust mitigation, noise controls, safety measures. We need a well-managed construction site given the magnitude of the project.
Before we turn to land use planning, let's take a lighter question. What is something interesting or unique within Ward 10 that you believe the rest of Hamilton should know about?
So this was an easy one for me. The first thing that popped into my mind was Windermere Basin Park. Many people don't even know that the park exists. I was one of the people who advocated for the city to actually put a sign up at the Eastport Drive entrance so that people would know that it's a park. And I love the space. It's a wonderful location for stack watching. We've done training through Environment Hamilton to teach people to stack watch there. And I would say this site really epitomizes the Hamilton story, that we can mess things up. And in Hamilton, let's be honest, we really have messed up areas of the natural environment, but we can figure out how to make them better too. I remember the cesspool that was Windermere Basin. I rode through it once in a rowboat with Hamilton Beach activist Jim Howlett. We were out there checking up on an issue and it was awful. And the area still isn't perfect, but nature doesn't care. It's a major migratory bird route, and that route still functions despite all that we've done. I had my first ever snowy owl sighting down at Windermere Basin Park. I've seen coyotes down there, deer, rabbits. I now have 2 pets at home because of Windermere Basin. I found two kittens there 5 years ago. They started following me as I was cycling on my bike through the Loop Trail. So Windermere Basin Park to me embodies the spirit of Hamilton in all its gritty, wonderfully scrappy, persistent hopefulness, I guess is a good way to put it.
City Council decides land use planning and zoning. It decides where housing and businesses are located and the type of housing and businesses which are permitted in locations. There are three questions on this topic. Ontario's provincial policy statement, Ontario's de facto planning law, defines the 300 meters surrounding LRT and GO stations as major transit station areas. Ward 5 will have two LRT stations and already has the new Confederation GO train station. Both require Hamilton City Council to update zoning bylaws to plan for intensification. What is your vision for major transit areas and how will you implement that vision?
This is really important. And in my role at Environment Hamilton, I've already been involved in advocating for the city to formally deem these stations protected major transit station areas under the provincial rules. A number of us wondered why this wasn't part of the municipal comprehensive review conversation, so we've managed to push that along a bit. And it's important because right now, under current provincial planning rules, these are the only areas where municipalities can impose inclusionary zoning policies. So that's to say, to require developers to offer a certain percentage of their new residential units at more affordable rent or purchase rates. Now, when I say affordable, we need to get into the weeds and understand what that's actually going to look like. Oftentimes, this isn't deeply affordable housing, but hopefully better than the going rates within the crazy market right now. City of Toronto is pursuing this, and other municipalities are further along on the effort, and Hamilton really needs to get cracking, because this is yet another way to make housing more accessible to more Hamiltonians. I would certainly work to see that process moved along as quickly as possible, because the development is starting, and we don't want to miss out on those opportunities. As far as those major transit station areas, my vision is that we need to consider these areas holistically. We need to ensure that what's being developed is really designed to be truly transit-oriented. So the idea is you want to support developments that are designed to accommodate people who are living car-free and maybe even incentivize that approach. And we also need to think about surrounding neighborhoods. How do we ensure through policy that those in most need of transit have easy access to the higher order line, to the LRT? So social housing within protected major transit station areas and, quote, affordable housing within these areas is important. And I want to raise aging in place. I think about my neighbors. Many of them are original homeowners, and the houses that they're in are becoming less manageable for them. But they're not people who need to be in a nursing home. We need to be thinking about these developments and the potential for people to make that transition from a single-family home, stay in their own neighborhood, but have options. And right now, those options just aren't there for them. So this is really going to help in that respect, too.
There are many planning applications along King Street between Nash Road and Gray Road, with more to come. What is your vision for this corridor, and why is that your vision?
I'm very mindful that a good portion of this corridor is within the Old Town Stony Creek secondary planning area. I would say there is a vision that's in place right now through that secondary plan, and I think it's really important to continue to respect that vision. What I would add is that I'm very mindful that there are roadway capacity issues along this stretch, especially the stretch of King Street moving through the town center. Anyone who's tried to move through that space in a car will know what I'm talking about. So I would say, really, if we're talking about higher density areas, some of that needs to be prioritized along the LRT route in some of the ways that we're talking about already. Of course, being respectful of the neighborhoods in that area as well. The Old Town Secondary Plan does make reference to higher density. The area includes a stretch of Queenston. So between Centennial and Grays, there is a vision for higher density along that stretch. And in many ways, that makes more sense because we do have the B line running right past that stretch and connecting into the LRT as well. And I just want to add, even if growth is permitted, we need to respect what's been set out in the secondary plan. And I would acknowledge, too, there's a special character to the old town center of Stony Creek. It's nestled up against the Niagara Escarpment. So I would say, too, that some of the other things that we need to think about are things like the importance of that geographic feature. And maintaining that is an important visual feature that people who live in the area or move in and out of the area are able to enjoy. And again, I also have concerns about lack of good public transit. service to the area. So I think if it was development that wasn't respectful of that secondary plan, we do run the risk of just clogging that area up with more car traffic.
The city of Hamilton is updating its decades-old residential zoning bylaws. This means the addition of secondary dwelling units within the neighborhoods of Ward 5, the dividing of older, larger lots to create two houses, and other forms of intensification. How will you balance the need to build more housing while responding to concerns regarding intensification?
I'm glad that the city is updating the residential zoning bylaws and they are now focused on low density. It's an important one. I think right out of the gate, I would say that the second dwelling units piece is one that the province mandated municipalities to put in place. So those rules now exist and people can do that on their properties. It's a good first step. And the city of Hamilton has been using a very cautious approach, and I support what they've been doing. They've been carefully implementing changes and then reflecting and tweaking the rules to ensure that any problematic impacts are addressed. And I think this is the way that they need to continue to proceed. And I think in communities, we need to avoid fearful responses to this kind of approach. And community members, you know, have a right to raise concerns. There needs to be an opportunity for people to ask questions, to discuss. But I also acknowledge that we are in a housing crisis. And when you think about second dwelling units, they provide wonderful opportunities for families to live on a single property site with multiple generations. You know, for families, maybe with elderly parents who they want to have near, but they still want to have their own space, a really wonderful opportunity for that to happen. And I also think about, you know, young purchasers. I know it's a very huge challenge for young Hamiltonians to purchase properties, but those who are going in that direction, to be able to put a second dwelling unit on the property, whether it's a basement apartment or an accessory unit, gives them a great opportunity to generate some revenue to help to pay for a mortgage. So on many levels, this is important. And moving forward, we need to figure out how to make it work. And then maybe one final comment on second dwelling units. I think people have a vision of their neighborhood being transformed in extreme ways overnight. And I think we need to look at this as something that over time may slowly start to take hold, but it's not going to be a crazy overnight shift in a neighborhood. I think people maybe equate it with larger developments where I think it is fair to say that change will come far more swiftly. So it's important to think about it that way too.
Road safety is a significant issue across Hamilton, including in Ward 5. What is your overall plan to address road safety? Please provide three detailed specifics of your plan.
I've already done some work through Environment Hamilton. We've done some friendly streets work focused in and around the Riverdale area where there are a lot of issues, a lot of people who are dependent on active transportation. So my overall plan would be to conduct a complete streets assessment for the ward and prioritize actions to take based on the outcomes of that assessment. I also want to ensure that there are safe east-west active transportation connections in the ward. And when I say that, I mean safe ways to move back and forth for pedestrians of all mobility abilities, for people on bikes. And I understand that there are some safe connections coming, but these seem to be focused on getting people to and from the Confederation GO station. So we know there's a connection coming through Nash and Bancroft to get people sort of in the back way to the station, and then some connections from the lakefront. So it'll help folks in Stony Creek to get from the lakefront to along Centennial to the Confederation GO. And that's great, and I support those things. But I would ask, what about all of us who are already moving east and west in and out of the ward? We need some improvements there. We need not just better, but we need some cycling infrastructure. Painted lanes on King already exist, but what about Queenston and Barton? And then we need to revamp intersections to boost safety for pedestrians of all mobility abilities. All of these things, I think, need to be taken into consideration to make the streets safer in the ward.
Turning to governance and expertise, let's use the idea that it takes 10,000 hours to master a skill or trade and apply it to being a municipal councillor. One person cannot be an expert in all matters which come before council for decision. How will you gain the necessary learning to be able to make informed decisions? What reading do you do? What professional development will you look for? And what types of people will you seek advice from?
On the reading side, in my current role, I'm an avid reader. I'm always poring through reports. And I would say the kind of reading I would do would vary greatly depending on the context. So just based on what I do now, I always look to other municipalities and how they're innovating to determine whether the same approach could be used in Hamilton. And I also find value in accessing academic articles. That's something I regularly do, and the focus there would be particularly on planning, environmental management stuff, again, to look for innovative approaches and to learn and understand the issues better. On the professional development side, I know for me personally, I'd love to do more training and learning around municipal budgets, development charges, taxation, that sort of thing. I have a basic understanding, but I feel as though that's a really critical piece for an elected councillor to wrap their head around. As far as people, again, I think I would do much like I do already. I look to informed and engaged academics. I'll use one example. Dr. Brian Doucette is one recently who I and a lot of others have been talking to about housing affordability and higher order transit. I would look to peers from other local not-for-profit organizations and networks that I'm a part of. And then, of course, people with lived experience to share what they're going through and what kind of change they'd like to see happen.
What are two changes you will propose to improve city services?
I support the call for a 311 service to make it easier for Hamiltonians to have their issues and concerns addressed. And I realize I'm not the first and only candidate to suggest this, but it feels like a really important step for improving public access to city services. But I would add that we also need to ensure that's combined with making sure the city actually has the capacity to respond effectively to calls. It feels like right now the system is broken, and I'm just reflecting on a personal experience I'm having right now with trying to get municipal bylaw to respond to an issue in my neighborhood, and they just aren't responding. 311 is important, but we need to make sure that it doesn't just end up being a number you call with no proper follow-up and action on the issue that you're wanting to have addressed or the information that you're wanting to acquire. I also, as a second change, I'd like to see some key services made more accessible to everyone. I'm sure there are many of them. I'm going to zero in on one that I've heard a lot about from community members, and that is better access to community recycling centers. And the reality that these centers are really inaccessible to many people in the city, especially if they don't have a vehicle. So the city needs to consider creative ways to make services more accessible and equitable. And community members often have great ideas to address the challenge. So one community member who raised this issue with me said, why don't we set up neighborhood has waste and other material recycling pickup at neighborhood festivals and that sort of thing so that anybody in the neighborhood could more easily access the service?
What are two changes you will propose to improve quality of life in Hamilton?
On the quality of life front, I'm going to focus in on climate justice. And climate justice links very closely to adaptation to the impacts of climate that we're already experiencing. And this is an important example. I would work with other councillors to put in place a bylaw requiring landlords to provide cooling during hot weather, just like they must provide heat in the wintertime. And I acknowledge this could end up being a problematic impact from a climate point of view because it means more energy use. So I also just want to add that combined with that, we need to be working very aggressively to figure out how to retrofit existing buildings and to ensure that new buildings are being built to be climate resilient right out the gate so that the heating and cooling side of things just becomes a standard part of how buildings function and feel. And then as well, I really think it's important to target the urban heat island effect. And again, you could argue this is a climate justice issue too, but I feel like it's a really important quality of life issue for any of us moving through our neighborhoods. So we need to green our streets. We need green development standards that set out the rules for developers, for the municipality, and we need to get cracking now to ensure we have that kind of infrastructure in place to enable street trees, for instance, to thrive. And we're going to need them. We need them already to improve quality of life in the city for everyone.
It's 2026. The Public Record is writing a review of the four-year council term that is just ending. What three words do you hope we will use to describe your term on council? And what three words do you hope will describe council as a whole?
So this was a tough one to limit to three words, but for me, for the first part, these are the three I came up with. Public good focused. And for council as a whole, I'm going to be honest, I came up with the same three words, public good focused.
Thank you. That's the end of the prepared questions you were sent in advance. Do you have any closing remarks you wish to share?
The only thing I would say is that I hope that I have the opportunity to talk to lots of constituents in the ward. We're going to be actively door knocking in the coming weeks. And I'm interested to hear people's concerns and people's ideas and looking forward to potentially serving Ward 5 as the Ward 5 counselor.
And how do they find out more about you and connect?
People can email me at lukasik, L-U-K-A-S-I-K, ward5@gmail.com. And the website URL is lukasikward5.ca. And on the website, you'll also find links to social media and a phone number, which I can share now. The phone number is 289-527-0545.
This has been episode 120 of the Public Records, the 155 podcast. Thank you to the Hamilton Public Library for the use of their makerspaces to record these podcasts. Thank you to the readers and listeners of The Public Record for your support. You can visit thepublicrecord.ca to get more City Hall coverage, sign up for my City Hall newsletter, and become a member of the Press Club to keep me covering Hamilton City Hall. Thank you.